Melissa Lockard with Steve Berman from the Seamheads, a show about the Oakland A's. The A's recovered from a series loss to the Padres over the weekend to take the first game of this five-game series against the Astros on Monday night, taking a 6-0 victory home. Chris Bassitt threw seven innings, and Jake Diekman and Lou Trevino were incredibly efficient in finishing off the game. Trevino in particular was notable with his three-pitch, three-out inning, which I'm sure every bullpen coach in the history of baseball would love. But now we're heading down to this four games. Alex Bregman's back for the Astros. The A's will be without Matt Chapman, so it'll be interesting to see how these four games go. What are you looking for as they finish off this series, Steve?
No more injuries, for one. really, what we saw with the Monday game was what they've been lacking for a while now, and that's just a really solid start. It seems like the starting rotation has been a bit of a question. I think the offense, too. I think a little bit more offense. I think we saw a little bit of that yesterday late, and that's kind of the way this team has been, where they kind of grind down opposing starters and then feast on middle relief and bullpen. And we've seen that most of the year, and lately it's been a little bit iffy. And yesterday we saw a little bit more of that. But yeah, I think Bassitt really helped out, because the A's have had so few starts where anyone goes seven innings at all. I think maybe four all season. And to see Bassitt go out there, and even though he gave up some hits, was able to get out of every inning unscathed. And from there, put no onus on the bullpen, really, two innings only. And I think that's what you need to see from the A's going forward, because yeah, the starting rotation, even though it's been healthier than the position players as of late, has not really been stepping up as much as we thought they would.
I think the most interesting part about Bassitt's start was that he gave up seven hits, but they were all singles and then no walks. So, you know, you talk about how you limit your damage. I mean, I guess, you know, balls are going to find holes sometimes, but if you're keeping it to a point where they're just going to be singles, then you have a pretty good chance of getting through. And he only actually threw 89 pitches through those seven innings. So, it's not out of the realm of possibility that he could have gone out there for an eighth inning even, which is, I think, even more impressive. Because, you know, I mean, despite the fact that the Astros are obviously down some of their better hitters, they're still leading the league in scoring, or at least they were as of a few days ago. And it's still a good lineup, even with the guys they've been rolling out there. So it was a nice bounce back for him after the start in the doubleheader in Houston, where he probably his worst start of the season.
Yeah, I think Bassitt's a guy. It was interesting yesterday afterward how Melvin said he's the one guy who you want to see on the mound starting a series like this. And immediately, you know, I started thinking, that's interesting, because, you know, they're going to have I would think, unless they just completely crater here in the next few weeks, a postseason series coming up here. And I'm not sure if Bassitt would be the game one starter. I still think probably at this point it would be Luzardo. But I think Bassitt, just the way that he's been the most consistent starter this season, is probably actually, I mean, he's got the best stats of any of the starters going on right now, and it's actually not even close. He's a guy who actually probably is your, if not game one, your game two starter. And that's something that you wouldn't have seen last year. Last year, he's moved off of the rotation to be a reliever going into the end of the season. And actually, going into the end of the last season, I was sort of a lone voice in the wilderness saying, you know what, I think Bassitt might be a guy you might use to start in a wild card game. And I got shouted down on Twitter about that one. Everyone was in love with Manaea at the time, and I could see why. He was on fire. But I just, there's something about Bassitt's mentality where even if his stuff isn't completely A1, he's able to get through and let innings from getting away from him. And he's also unflappable, and his stuff is actually pretty good. So I think he's a guy who's probably earned a postseason start at this point, since there's not going to be any other adds to the rotation. And if you actually, I mean, even Puck is a guy who everybody thought was going to be a starter going into this year. Then we thought that he was going to come in and be a reliever after his shoulder stuff cleared up. And now his shoulder stuff isn't clearing up. So you're probably looking at a situation where he's not pitching this year.
Yeah, that's a real unfortunate development. And I think it's pretty troubling that, you know, basically this shoulder soreness has popped up for him now three straight times when he's ramped up to try to get ready for actually pitching in a regular season game. You know, at the end of spring training, when it first happened, it was kind of that point of spring training where, you know, pitchers really start to let it go and try to get ready for the regular season. And then you had summer camp, and he's looking like the best pitcher in camp. And then all of a sudden, as they get to a point where it's going to be, okay, we're ready to go, it pops up again. And then this was going to be the last bullpen that he was going to throw, and it pops up. So, you know, you hate to think that he's going to require shoulder surgery after just having elbow surgery. But at this point, there's obviously something in there that's preventing him from getting full bore and not being able to come away with that without soreness. So I kind of wonder if he's going to have to end up going under the knife. And the timing of that, of course, would be incredibly discouraging, because had this regular season gone the way that it would have gone without the virus, you know, maybe they make the decision to have surgery in April if he tries to come back from it in spring training and it pops up again. But because he goes home, feels good doing the kind of lighter work that you do when you're kind of in between, comes back and then it pops up, and then they think, well, you know, you might as well see what you can get. You know, they could end up losing a whole next season for him if it ends up having to be some sort of a shoulder surgery. So I think that's really discouraging news. Obviously, the Matt Chapman news is very discouraging for this season, but from the long kind of view for the franchise, I don't know. I think that AJ Puck news yesterday might have been the most discouraging of all.
Yeah, what a just a crappy week for the A's. I mean, they were rolling into that Houston series looking pretty good, and it seemed like everything was kind of coming together. Simeon was actually starting to really hit, and then he gets hurt. And we were wondering when he's going to be able to come back, if he's going to go on the injured list, which he didn't. And he's going to be coming back very soon here. But still, that was a bit worrisome to think that the guy who played 162 games last year has got a little issue there. And then Chapman, the injury you just mentioned, that one seems like it might be a little bit more serious. The A's are being a little bit coy with exactly how long it's going to be. But, you know, they say he's not going to be on the injured list for now. But I don't think that's completely out of the question. And then you also, then of course, with the COVID stuff that we talked about last time, and the A's were off for all those days in a row because of that. And then they had a series against the Padres, which started off pretty poorly. And they played pretty well on Saturday. And then on Sunday, they lost again. So it just seemed like everything that the A's is sort of in flux. So Bassett's start on Monday to go 7 scoreless and to have that victory against the Astros and widen that lead in the AL West is so huge, because everything seemed like it was kind of come apart for the A's, where they were just riding high there for a bit. And it just seemed like, okay, are they going to be the number one seed or the number two seed? And, you know, everything sort of seemed a little bit more in doubt after the weekend. So you kind of wonder, I mean, this team seems like it's tough and can get through these things and can handle adversity, but the adversity came pretty big and pretty swift over the last week.
Yeah, with Chapman, you know, it's funny because, or not funny, but it's a little troubling, because with tendonitis, you sometimes think with these athletes, they might get a cortisone shot or something to try to be able to get them through it in a regular season, but they're sort of running out of time for that. I think usually the cortisone shot, you know, requires them to be out for a couple weeks and then they come back. So, you know, if they were going to go that route, you would almost have to think he'd have to have it now and then miss basically almost the rest of the regular season and then come back in time for the playoffs, which, you know, their playoff odds right now, I saw this morning, are at 99.8%. So that's certainly a risk that they could take if they felt, you know, like they were in pretty good position to make the postseason. But that would be a pretty huge loss to swallow. Even if Chapman, you know, had been struggling at the plate recently, he's still been one of their most productive hitters all season. Obviously, the defense is enormously productive for him, whether he's hitting or not. And, you know, to lose a guy like that and his just sort of fiery personality, I think that sort of drives them from the bench as well. I think it would be a really huge loss. And it reminds me a lot of, you know, that 2014 season. And you saw, like, when Josh Donaldson and Brandon Moss are struggling with these sort of soreness joint issues. I think it was a shoulder for Moss, and I can't remember if it was a hip or a knee for Donaldson, but it just sort of lingered that whole second half, and it was hard for either of them to really get back to, you know, where they were. But they were so important to the team, they played through it anyway, and you kind of think maybe that's what's in line for Chapman for the rest of the season.
Maybe it's tough. Chapman was, you know, he had that crazy strikeout streak where you just kind of wondered if he's just in one of, you know, he's a pretty streaky hitter. A lot of major league players are, even some of the best ones. And when he's hot, he's a guy who just seems to hit every ball 110 miles an hour. And then when he's not, you know, he's striking out 9 out of 10 times or whatever it was. And you have to think that he was probably dealing with that hip issue throughout that period of slowness, and it's a little bit troubling just because they had all those days off and then this occurs. So, you know, it's just something that he's actually been dealing with all season, and then it just sort of got worse and worse to the point where it was unavoidable to play through it anymore, because I think he seems like a guy who would try to play through just about anything. And obviously it came to a point where it's like, all right, he can't even hit, he can't catch up to a fastball, he's out in front, he all of his at bats seemed like he was a completely different player. So yeah, I don't know, it's gonna take a little bit of time. I think the A's have enough depth to sort of muddle through and at least play good enough, you know, have 500 ball enough to make it to the playoffs pretty easily without concern. But yeah, what you want here is they avoided the slow start that everybody was worried about going into the season, because they'd had so many in the last few seasons. And then what you want to do is make sure that you're hot going into the postseason, and you got everything figured out. You got your rotation figured out. Your offense is rolling. And at this point right now, you don't have all that. And it's going to be tough to sort of get that sort of rhythm, that momentum. I know those are sort of things in the analytics age that you don't want to talk about too much, but still, I do think that going into the playoffs, you want to feel like you're playing your best baseball. And it's going to be difficult to do that when you don't have your full complement of players. And Chapman is, you know, I mean, you can argue about who's the best player at any given time, but I think in terms of, you know, who's the most valuable player on the team, he is the one. We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors. Talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Usually we just brush it off or blame ourselves, saying things like, I lost my mojo, or avoid it altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work, or sorry, honey, I'm just not feeling it, or my favorite team lost a replay review and I just am not in the mood anymore. But with Roman, it's easy to talk about it. With a real healthcare professional who can prescribe real medication, it's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to getroman.com/seamheads and complete an online visit. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a healthcare professional and take care of it. Go to getroman.com/seamheads today. If approved, you'll get $15 off your first order of ED treatment. That's getroman.com/seamheads, getroman.com/seamheads.
The weird thing about this postseason is I think it's going to be harder to tell who's actually good and who's not in terms of the teams, because I think all these teams have sort of gone through these stretches where, you know, they might be winning, but you don't think they're necessarily winning by the like authoritative manner that you would expect them to. And yet at the end of the day, this is all you have to work with when you're looking at what these teams are coming into the postseason with. So I think it's going to create a wrinkle for that postseason tournament that you don't often see, you know, in this sport, because you usually have a pretty good idea of what you're looking at with 162 games of things, you know, data to kind of go through. And the fact that teams are only playing certain groups of teams and they're only playing some of them sometimes, and, you know, like the Padres, the A's will only see them that 3 games that they played over the weekend. So it's definitely going to be hard to sort of weight who's the best team going into this, except maybe for the Dodgers, who, you know, I think you can probably make a good argument that they're as good as their record is. But, you know, and then, I mean, what was also interesting, I thought, with that game on Sunday was, you know, Chapman's injury kind of took some of the spotlight away from what was, again, a really kind of horrible replay call. It was the second time in that series. There was a third one last night, which maybe wasn't quite as cut and dry, where it looked like the A's got sort of, you know, jobbed over by that call. But you look at, you know, the Friday night call where the run gets taken off the board and then Luzardo gives up the four runs, and he'd really looked dominant up until that point in the game. And then Sunday, you know, Mike Fiers gives up two runs almost immediately after. Robbie Grossman's not called safe, and then, you know, the call is upheld. The momentum just sort of kind of got away from them, I think, in both games. They did a better job on Sunday, at least, of getting back into that game than they did on Friday night. But it's definitely starting to get into their heads a little bit. And it could have been a bigger deal last night, because Sean Murphy hits a home run right after Tony Kemp's called out at third base. And, you know, had the game not sort of been blown open at the end, it could have been a big deal if the Astros had rallied towards the end of the game there. So I don't know how they deal with that as they get towards the postseason. But in a postseason game, you figure there's going to be at least one or two replayed calls. And if they're feeling like they can't trust that they're going to get good calls from out of New York, I wonder how that changes any of their strategy.
It's weird, right? What did the A's do to piss off the people in New York or the umpires in general? I mean, it seems like it's the Raiders, they used to be in Oakland, were a team that sort of always felt like there was some sort of conspiracy against them with the officiating, and they were like, get called, you know, repeatedly every year, seemed like the most penalties called for any team in the NFL. And in this case, it just seems like it's every replay, and it's in different ways too, because on Friday when Olsen was called safe, I looked at that and I didn't see anything that was conclusive enough to overturn that call, and they overturned it. It's just, it was very odd. And then the next one was the Grossman play, which that was completely obviously should have been overturned and wasn't. And then the Kemp one was, like you said, not quite as cut and dry. I could see that one going both ways, but still, it just sort of, you know, add a little bit of terrible tasting icing to a cake that the A's have been forced to eat for a while now. And it just seems like every single way that this could go, I don't understand why they have replay in the first place. Well, I understand why they have it. I mean, the idea is to get every call right, and they don't want controversies and that kind of thing. But it's a setup that takes so much time. You know, none of the replays take under 2 minutes. It's even the easiest ones take 2+ minutes. And then a lot of times, either they don't overturn something that's obvious, or they do overturn something that isn't obvious, or they review a part of the play that really has nothing to do with whether or not the guy is safe or out. Like, you know, something where, is he blocking the plate correctly? That type of thing. And sort of ignore the actual relevant part of why you think they would be reviewing it in the first place. The entire replay situation, I mean, really in all sports, is pretty bad. The NBA is same too. It's like the stoppage of play is just ridiculous. It's terrible for game flow. But in the A's case, it's that it's wrong so many times, and it's just baffling. I don't know why that the A's would have so much bad luck in terms of this. I don't think there would be any reason for a conspiracy. Maybe, Melissa, you can think of some reason where the A's might have upset the league, but I can't. But at this point now, the A's are just completely just beside themselves. I mean, Melvin can't hide his frustration, and I can't blame him.
Yeah, I mean, I can't fathom what a conspiracy against the A's would be. They seem like a fairly innocuous franchise when it comes to why the commissioner's office or anybody would have any kind of vendetta against them. But you know, you're right. I mean, I don't know that replay has added anything to the game that couldn't easily be corrected by, say, putting sensors in the bases and in the top of the walls and along the foul lines that would light up and tell you, you know, the information that you might need in 90% of these replays. You know, you could kind of figure that out from a technology perspective. But, you know, the fact that you've got home plate umpires that are clearly failing in their ability to call balls and strikes, but we're not replaying any of that. And we're not replaying check swings, which are also, you know, mismanaged calls from all sides, you know, throughout the time. But we're doing it on these sorts of calls. Just it doesn't seem to add anything. You're not getting all the calls right. You know, I mean, there's some obvious calls that may get overturned and changed or whatever. And you look back and Armando Galarraga would have had a perfect game. But you know, the majority of the missed calls are the ones that are home plate umpire balls and strikes, and there's nothing being done about that. And I think one of the kind of subtle things that's gone on this season, I think, is how bad the umpiring has been, and nobody's really talking about it. And I think it's hard to be critical of the people that are the umpires, just because this is a very strange situation. They had some umpires retire and new ones coming in, and so this is their first experience, doing major league umpiring after being in the minor leagues and maybe coming up and, you know, for a few games here or there. Or you might be looking at situations where, guys opted out, and so people got called up as umpires quicker than before. But the quality of the umpiring, to me, has been notably bad. Hitters on all sides and pitchers on all sides have been visibly frustrated by balls and strike calls. And I'm not even a robot umpire kind of person. I feel like that takes away some from the game. But I don't think we're doing enough to train umpires to be really good at what they are doing behind the plate there. To me, that's the most important part of a game. It changes every single game. It doesn't matter if it's a blowout or not. That home plate umpire is having a huge influence on what's happening there. And to waste time on replay for a couple of calls that are, you're right, not even getting called correctly out of New York, and then not focusing on the home plate umpires, just seems sort of like, you know, once again, they're missing the point. You know, they're focusing on the trees and the forest is building all around them, and they just have no idea where they're going. So I get the A's frustration. I've tried to think of what the conspiracy would be. I guess maybe if they want to go all the way back to, you know, blaming them for bringing in steroids in the late 80s or something, but that seems a little crazy. So I don't see where any kind of bias would come into it. But it is crazy that at this point, I think they have to assume they're just never going to get a replay call in their favor.
Yeah, it's super weird. I think at some point there's going to be some sort of investigative report about how the umpires union and just and all of the guys who are established and have been there forever have handled all of this. So the, you know, you have the replays that's a situation I don't think that they wanted to deal with. And then who are actually in charge of the replays? It's older umpires in New York. So you have a situation where do they want to show up? As that's the whole baseball thing. No one ever wants to get shown up. They're not going to show up their friends. So you wonder about the politics that go into every decision that goes to New York. And then also all the talk about, as you said, the robot umpires and what's going on with the robot umpires in the strike zone. And they thought that actually maybe baseball would have a computerized strike zone this year for this season because they have so many different rule changes. And they didn't do that, but you also wonder how upset are the umpires about that. I don't know. I have no idea what's going on, but you have to wonder if something is going on strangely just because of how weird this has been and how ineffective replay has been in general.
I think baseball needs its Mike Pereira to kind of be its sort of guiding voice of showing when the umpires get it wrong, because I think that certainly has helped the NFL to have somebody who clearly is coming from a position of having been part of that group, but is willing to criticize the bad calls in a very public way. And, at some point, that's the only way you're going to get, you know, sort of that behavior you're talking about to change, is that they get kind of embarrassed a little bit by their own bad work, you know, by a colleague.
Exactly. Yeah. It's definitely one of those deals where accountability doesn't seem to be in high supply with what's going on. And it's really hurting the A's at this point. And yeah, I think that's just a total nightmare situation now with replays that even if you say, okay, I don't trust replay, so we're not going to challenge calls during a postseason game. If another team challenges the call, the A's have to pretty much assume that it's going to go against them. And at that point, you might see some controversy because these are just regular season games. Obviously, they're really important because they're all worth, 2.7 times what they normally would be. But in this case now, if there's something that happens in the playoffs, I think the A's are going to probably create a pretty big stink going on if they get jobbed in the playoffs in the same sort of situation. So hopefully it doesn't come to that. But at this point, the way that this year has been in all respects, it almost seems inevitable at this point.
Yeah. And I don't know if you saw that Mike Rizzo got thrown out of a game. Maybe David Forrest or Billy Bean needs to get thrown out of a game to sort of make its point at this point. I've never seen a GM thrown out of a game before, but this season is all for new things.
I could see it happening with the A's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Maybe Billy from his stationary bicycle under the Coliseum with a bullhorn yelling from down there or something, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, they'll like do a sort of a miming of riding a bicycle and then throw him out, you know, and then
right.
and then the announcers will have to be like, "Okay, well, what does that mean? Oh, wait, Billy's on his bicycle. Oh, he's gotten thrown out. Okay, well, I guess Billy needs to go farther away from the field than he already is."
Yeah, exactly. You got to drive back down to Modesto, like in Moneyball.
That's right. Exactly. It's, or at least go back to his house in Alamo or wherever he lives and watch the game from there. I'm sure he's got a nice Peloton there anyway.
Right. Yeah, I'd hope so. Well, it'll be interesting to see how the rest of these four games go in this series. I think if the A's can take two of them, I see a pretty good run for them going into securing this division title. So it's obviously an important four games. And I think, to get a chance to take from the Astros when they're not playing at their best is definitely something that they need to take advantage of as well. So thanks so much for listening. We'll be back at the end of this series to kind of wrap it up and see where the A's and Astros stand.